Don't you think it's about time for a podcast that's more fulfilling? One that's about the vibrant exchange of ideas and perspectives that happens when we actually come together? We got you covered.
Welcome to the Deep Blue Project,
where the depths of conversation meet the waves of personal experience. This is a real, raw, and unscripted show about everything from leadership lessons to self-awareness, wellness, and the latest current events. We cover it all. We have a rotating cast of guests as we share our personal stories, insights, and opinions on the issues that matter most. Plus, we have a blast while doing it.
The Deep Blue Project. It's not just a podcast. It's an experience. And now your host, Chris Workman.
All right, everyone. So welcome to DBP, the Deep Blue Project. Today, we're going to sit here and let's have a little chat with my friend Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing great this morning. How are you doing this morning, other than having things crash down out of your cabinets?
Because I tell you, it was kind of just crazy. Like, I knew we were going to do this. So I cut the grass today, did everything I had to do. And I was sitting down just, I figured I'd grab a sandwich and then I'd come down and get everything set up and get going. And man, I'm sitting in the freaking room and everything's like, I hear this crash and bang. And I'm like, did the dogs do something? So you've been here, our liquor, we keep all of our liquor, like you have parties and you have stuff left over, you kind of store it. Well, I guess it got too heavy because we don't drink normally, like unless, we have parties and stuff here. We don't have a lot right. We don't sit and drink every day. I mean, we just crack it out when people are here.
The audience is going to think I just come over to your house and drink when I come to town with the way that you're throwing this out there. Like, you know where the liquor cabinet is. That's not what the situation is at all.
And look, it's not that bad. It's just I'm trying to kind of play that. We just kind of – you always put stuff up there, and it's like anything else in your house, you just leave it. And, like, until you use it or somebody asks for something or you're having something, you don't really go into it. So right. I'm sitting there and I just hear this big crash and my wife was upstairs and my mother-in-law was in the kitchen and the dogs. I'm like, holy crap, what just happened? I walk in and all the shelf that the liquor bottles were on had broken.
The interior shelf inside the cabinet?
Yeah, like the, how you have you have shelves in your cabinet and then they have them little, you put them little metal pieces in and then the shelf sits on top of it. Well, I never even realized. I've been living in this house for 7 years. I never realized that this thing had these little, like, thin metal pieces in the four corners to hold this shelf up.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it finally, after so many years, decided today to give way, and all these bottles slid out. It's above our oven, and it's, like, on the top shelf. You got to get on a ladder to get stuff out of it.
Right.
Like
that's a long ways for those to fall.
Yeah. It was like a good 6.5 foot,
it just, thank goodness nobody was standing in front of down below.
Yeah. But it was a mess. It sounded like a wrecking ball hit the back of my house. So bad. But anyway, so I had to clean that up and, get that situated. So, that's where we are. And so, life's things. Like, that's what we do. That's what happens. Things happen. So
everybody wants to talk about living in a home, and it's, you're always mowing the grass. You're doing all these things. I mean, there's plenty of things to do. You're never without a task.
Right, right. And, I got my Saturday norms. Cut the grass, do whatever. So it was kind of the norm of the day. And then that happened, so it just adds more to it. But that's just kind of leads into the – I guess that's something that, we didn't know what we were going to talk about today, but I guess that's what we can get into. Like, stuff just happens, man. You're like, out of nowhere, this shelf breaks and causes a major mess and just tears everything up. And it was nothing nobody did. It just
– right, today, just happened.
Today, it decided to give way and cause a mess.
Yeah, so, well, I do want to do a little shout out. So let's do a little shout out to Chad Reed, because he's the actual president of the Fallen Officer Fund of Colorado. Okay. And that's the event I was just at, running the 5K. Awesome. So he's the president of that, and they did a really good job. City of Inglewood does an awesome job. Got to see a lot of cool people down there, and got to run. It's downhill going, but it's an out and back, so you got to run uphill on the way back. So like you said, you never know what's going to happen. You never know who you might see, what you might do. So I was just glad to keep moving the entire time. But
so how you feeling after that? Well, here's one thing. Like, I'd rather you make me run uphill first than make me run downhill back.
Man. Yeah, they do it for their officer, Jeremy Bittner. He was doing a traffic stop, and 13 years ago, he was doing a traffic stop, and a DUI driver sideswiped him as he was outside of his car, and he was killed right on the side of the road. So, horrible thing. But that's a good, they've merged a bunch of different fallen officer funds into that one fallen officer fund for Colorado, and they're doing great work. So that's really good.
No, that's awesome. That is awesome. So you're going to, we were talking a little bit before we got on, so you feel like you're going to be sitting here a little bit. You're going to like try to get up and not be able to walk.
Maybe, right? But I can just
crawl to where you got to go.
It's Saturday. I already mowed my grass already yesterday, so I got everything out of the way. So as long as I'm okay, as long as I can stand up and go to work tomorrow, I should be all right. All
right. There you go. So how are things going with Drew Bolt? I know you're having some classes come up, and you're getting a few more things out on LinkedIn each day, which are getting some positive feedback, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's really, Bold's going really good. You know, it's one of those things, Chris, as an entrepreneur, and any of the other entrepreneurs listening, understand that there's always that situation where you're trying to bridge the gap of, do I just go after my own personal brand and wait for the company brand to come along? So I think I'm sort of still in that mindset where I'm trying to brand some things as True Bold, and I've been having a lot more conversations with people that are other entrepreneurs that are sort of in the same space with True Bold. And just so everybody knows, True Bold, it's at trueboldness.com. You can go there and see a little bit about what it's about. It's pretty, the website's, just a couple page website right now, but our whole slogan is to unearth the true boldness within. And that's what we're hoping to help people in the first responder community be able to do, and in public service just in general. Because there seems to be not a lot of resources in leadership type of thing. So yeah, on the 12th of this month, I'm going to be actually leading a 4-hour training up in Rangeley, Colorado. And I've been asked to come up there, and we're going to be talking about establishing your belief and what you can do on that. So I'm very excited about that. And it should be a really good kickoff. I've got some other things out there that haven't been finalized yet, but hopefully I'll have a few more tour dates around the country and get some more people interested in having that training come into either their agency or their community. I would love to have that happen, and I'm very excited about that. And then, with myself personally, just trying to stay out there on LinkedIn. Like you say, you don't know what's going to happen. Every day on LinkedIn, I meet somebody new, and it's been really beneficial. And, from an entrepreneur standpoint, you're always wondering, when are you going to get that? When are you going to make that connection that might help you get into that space where you want to go? And that's very, you just never know. You just never know who you might meet and who might respond to your post. And we need to get out of our heads. The thing is, we have products because we're unique. We're unique people, and we're trying to do unique things, and just putting that down on paper. And people are going to challenge from time to time, going to challenge us on, you don't really have a brick and mortar, or you don't really have a product. So, we need to keep pushing through that. And there are going to be people that want to align with us. I would sure like to have some to be able to do some more production. You and I have talked about doing some online classes, or, you and I have talked about getting, starting to look at maybe doing something in a written format and reach out to some literary agents and stuff like that. And that's all about building your brand. Believe a choice of leadership is what that is. So, Yeah, I'm not as good plugging. You know, I've been running. You know, I ran this morning instead of sleep in. So
I get
I'm
it.
A little.
The endorphins
are behind.
Starting to kick off. The endorphins are coming down. You know, the relaxation is kicking in. But that's why we're just kind of sitting here and you know, just coming along with what we got to do today.
I did have a good conversation at the. I ran into one of my. Academy classmates that's a sergeant with Inglewood PD, and he was sort of sharing with me that he has had this vision of doing some negotiator training and being able to go out and about. And I felt really good. Like, people think LinkedIn is just this thing where we're out there just pimping ourselves, and that's not the truth. You know, we really are trying to network. Like, for me, I'm just trying to network with people and see who I might be able to meet. And I'm like, hey, when I get back home, I'll introduce you to this person. And, you know, doing those introductions through LinkedIn, I think has been really beneficial for people. I know I've done that for you, and I know you've done that for me. And hopefully anybody listening to this podcast is doing it. If you're on LinkedIn, hopefully you're using it the way you need to use it, which it being really a networking situation.
I think that's a perfect thing, is getting into the networking. I mean, you have to be willing and able to put yourself out there and make these connections with individuals. And especially as first responders, networking is very important for us. I mean, it's something that we get to reach out and see what's going on in other spaces and see how we're not so different. Like, things that are happening in Delaware are not so far-fetched from what's happening in Colorado. It's not so right. far-fetched with what's happening in other places. We may do these things a separate way, and we may think about things when they happen, and we're like, we get so frustrated, or we're like, it's only here, like, we're having this problem. And then you network and you talk to all these people that you know and you've met. Like, we talk all the time about situations that are job-related or things that are happening with the first responder community, and it's the same.
Right.
Like, it takes away some of that frustration going, like, we're not in that, we're all in that same boat. So now we can start having those conversations with other people about how we can try to fix it. And I'm not saying make an all inclusive, you know, solution to the problem. It's fix it within all of us and to realize that, hey, we're focusing on something that we might not be able to fix the big picture, but however, we can have that conversation together and maybe fix it with ourselves and go, hey, this is how we can solve that problem in our own little space.
Right. Within your own little team, right? Like, whatever your sphere of influence is, you can take care of that. And it might just be two or three people or whatever, but it's definitely a thing. One of the topics that was brought up this morning when I'm standing around waiting for the race to start is got to talking about, you know, newer officers, the Gen Zs, you know, everybody wants to complain about that. And I just look at people and go, well, what are you doing? What are you doing to actually look into that? Like, have you educated yourself, or are we just keeping complaining about it? And I know you and I, like, when we see each other and we're out with a bunch of people, that always comes up, where it's this new generation and how they're not doing it the way we've always done it. No one is actually trying to, well, I'm not going to, I don't want to say no one or never, but it seems like there doesn't seem to be a real concerted focus on why are we not talking about that? Because everybody has the exact same problem in every one of their agencies. No one else is coming into law enforcement. Guys our age are not getting into law enforcement. So we're not backfilling it with people our age. So that means the Gen Xers are out. Millennials, none of them are joining up into law enforcement or first responder community because they're getting up there in age. You know, they're in their mid-30s now. They're rolling through. So this newer generation, Gen Z, is really who we've got coming to law enforcement and the first responders community.
Yeah, this is a conversation that continues no matter with where you're at or who you're speaking to. Everybody has the problem now of hiring, recruiting, and retention, and this issue about how do we change or what do we do with this. And there's been so many things thrown up against the wall, but it still seems like it's not happening. Like, there is nothing that we're doing that is bringing these new generation into wanting to be law enforcement officers? Where, at what point do we change? At what point do we adjust? Now, you know, some of that argument is, you know, as law enforcement officers, you have to be able to take the criticism. You have to be able to take people yelling and screaming and hollering at you. You have to be able to. I get that. I honestly get that. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, I mean, my opinion, and this is just my opinion, I mean, and that's just the way it goes, is saying that maybe you don't do that the first day they walk into your police academy. Maybe that thing, when they show up at 6 o'clock, you don't have five drills in their face screaming at them, telling them they're pieces of crap, and they're this, and they're that, and they're going to do this, and they're going to do that. And they're not used to that, man. They are not used to that. That has not happened for most of these younger people. They've never, ever had that happen to them, ever.
Right.
So should we be at a point where, instead of doing that the first day, should we be training them? Is this an opportunity to train them to get used to that? Because, yeah, we deal with it. You know that. I know that. Any law enforcement professional out there listening knows that. Man, you get there 9 times out of 10 nowadays. The first thing is you show up somewhere and there's a more than 50% chance the first thing you're going to get is, what the hell are you doing here? I didn't freaking call you.
Right.
You know, and then either you get something called derogatory, or they're angry, or they're ticked off, and you're like, dude, you called me. Whoever, somebody in his house called me. I didn't come here out of the blue.
Right.
But they're, well, but they're mad.
I don't think any town, USA police department or sheriff's office is like the Marines. And so I just don't think we should be treating people like it's their first day. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, that'd be a good question. Like, how's the military doing it now versus how they were doing it 10 years ago? And maybe they're still doing it the same way. I don't know. But, you know, my thought is, especially in Colorado, they've been passing a lot of laws about, we have anti-hazing laws for the police academy now.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So there are a lot of things coming out where you have to, you know, there's no just, hey, we think that you guys looked wrong at the instructor, so give me 20. That doesn't happen any longer in Colorado. So, but I'm wondering if the first day should not be more of, hey, your instructor, like, you get assigned a group of instructors. And because what I'm finding is, in my study, Chris, is Gen Zs, and this is the feedback I get from Gen Zs, they are very self-conscious because of low self-esteem. Things that make them uncomfortable really make them uncomfortable. And so that might present itself different ways. Like, they might seem more anxious or might get really quiet or anything like that, but they don't have a lot of confidence in what we would have called hard skills back in the day. They're good at some things and they're bad at other things. But the big thing is, we know that they want to be heard and seen. And right. if those two things are happening, then I think the other part comes into play where they're going to be receptive to the type of training that we want to give them. We've heard and seen them. We sort of give them the expectations of what they can expect of us as a police academy, you know, whatever the police academy is. And then that gives them the chance to either buy in or not buy in. I think that's what we're not doing. I think we're not giving them a choice. And if we were going to give them a choice right up front, you and I and our generation, we looked at it differently because we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have the internet. We still used encyclopedias. We had to go use the Dewey Decimal System, like all those things that will, you know, that's like the old story that your grandpa used to tell where it's like, I walked 10 miles in the snow with barefoot.
Yeah.
Our brains develop differently and we problem solve differently. Here, like latchkey kids, we're all our age, right? Today, that's against the law. Like if we went somewhere and somebody is not of whatever the age is to not be with an adult, some states it's 12, some states it's 10. You know, back then it was like, hey, you got a 10-year-old brother, you got your 8-year-old sister, they're going to come home from school and parents will be home when they get home. I know of many people that their kids in their 20s can't hold on to jobs right now because they feel anxiety all the time. And a lot of times when they go to a therapist for their anxiety, the therapist will say, hey, it's not anxiety. You're just dealing with life.
Right. It's trying to find that middle ground to say, what do we do? Because this profession is slowly dying. There's going to be at a point where our generation don't want to do this. Like, you can't, there's no sustainability. So right. my fear is that sustainability. If we're only hiring people that have already retired, and you know, it's a great solution right now for a lot of places having hard times. Please don't think that I'm saying that you shouldn't be doing it, because thank God they're even wanting to still do it, to have reserve officers right. or part-time officers
yep.
that are coming into these smaller agencies and helping them just survive right now is amazing and it's great. But there's going to be a point where they just can't do it anymore. And we need to figure out what we're doing before it gets to that point, because then what are you going to do?
Right. Well, I just, before we got on here, I was on LinkedIn and I see Ty posting about how he's having to be, you know, he's a chief of police and he's having to be the dispatcher today.
Yeah.
Because there was nobody to dispatch. It's just we need to make this a good place for people wanting to work. And thank God for the people that want to be part-time. And maybe that's more of a thing where you have we go back to, you know, more of a fire department mentality of, hey, we got volunteers and they work a couple times a week. But then we get into all the questions of how do we keep those people trained? How do we deal with policies and procedures? How do we keep them updated? You know, how do we vest all those, you know, all those things, all those risk mitigation questions that attorneys are going to ask and city leaders are going to ask and county leaders are going to ask. But the old days of keeping somebody around and saying, hey, you need to stay because you're going to get a retirement in 20 years. I don't think any of these newer people coming to law enforcement care about working the job for 20 years.
Well, they don't look at, I don't think they look at things as a career anymore. And I'm just saying this, like, this isn't everybody. I'm not classifying everybody in that generation as the same Correct. Thing. I'm just saying that some of the things that we have dealt with in the last 3 or 4 years, and that's, I can only say 3 or 4 years since I've had to hire or try to hire, is that everybody wants to, you know, everybody wants to work 5 days a week. Everybody doesn't want to work weekends and they don't want to work nights. Law enforcement doesn't work that way. That's not conducive to this profession. This profession You're right on. Does not work that way. It's a total separate thing from anything else that you do. It's in a lot of places, it's a 24-hour job. You know, you work in the big cities, it's 24/7. You're running from here to there to anywhere. Half the time, you're not even getting a break because you're having so many calls for service. And mm-hmm. they just, you know, there's individuals that just don't want to do that anymore. The fact of the matter is, and everybody out there listening who is in this profession knows, you know, just 15 years ago, you were testing for this job or you had a job position open, you were getting thousands of people taking a test.
So
it was crazy. And now you can't even get 50. Right. That's the issue.
You can't get 50.
That's the issue. And we all understand that when you're hiring, you know, for a law enforcement officer, there's more stringent ways. Now, you have departments now, and I'm sure you can see it, that are lowering standards, that are lowering things that you need to do just to try to get people. But is there a middle ground? You know, how far are you going to lower that? You still have to do this job. You Right. still have to be able to answer these calls. You still have to have the wherewithal to protect yourself and the other people out there. And it doesn't just, you can't just go to work from 7 to 3.
Right. And you can't do remote work. Like, we're never going to have a remote work option ever, ever. Never, ever. And you know, I don't know about you, but I still have a hard time with the amount of calls we take over the phone, especially like I had a big hang up about stolen vehicles. You know, I understand it's a pain in the ass to go to somebody's house and sit there and listen to them talk about how their car was stolen. I understand, you can be doing some more other stuff somewhere else, right? A lot of times these larger crimes are being committed by people that have stolen cars. You know, you want, and they don't go out the first time. It's not like the first time they went out and robbed a bank with a stolen car. No, they stole a car. So we need to be able to at least go out, take a report from the person, see if there's any physical evidence, all that kind of stuff. Like, let's do that where we're just not texting in, or how do we know? How do I know that I'm just, you know, you and I are, you're just not mad at me, you know?
Right.
And I've loaned you my car, but you know, we need to go out and like investigate some stuff. Right. And that's what I think the feedback I've gotten from teammates of mine and other people that are not on my team, but in that age range, is they do not feel confident being able to orally communicate with people. They lack in communication because they've been communicating this way, like just right. 180 characters at a time. There's no nuance to it. If you've just been interacting with people like this through the pandemic and through your schooling, this is how you interacted with people and this is how you conducted your life. How do we expect them to go out and get in somebody's living room and see this body language occurring? You know, like, you know, the old rule about the stretching. You knew a guy, like if you're running a guy and they're like, man, I'm code 4. You don't need to clear me. And then they're doing this number where they're stretching and they're looking all around. You know, the fight's either going to be on, or you better get your running shoes on because that guy is bolting.
Right.
I just think it comes down to communication issue deep down from that standpoint is we need to do a better job of communicating what we're trying to teach them and why that is. We need to get people at the point where they can share with us what their deficiencies are, because I think everyone that is working in a police academy today wants the people to show up. They want to have them be 20-year cops that go home every night, that are able to protect themselves, able to protect the community, their partners, and be able to file good cases on criminals. If we just boiled it down to that,
right?
I think it would be hugely different. It seems like we just are grading them from the moment that they show up.
I've always hated that thing that we always bring up in leadership classes and that people always bring up, well, we've always done it that way. Well, guess what? I mean, let's not do it that way then. Then maybe it's time to change it. Maybe you need to look at the system and say, look, you can train people to do this job correctly. You can train people to be good police officers, but we're so regimented into the old way of doing this that no one wants to change it. Now, some places they are, from what I understand, you know, the FBI has changed a lot of what they do. They're more anaerobic. They're more, you know, they're more learning and a teaching basis from right. what I understand. Like, I haven't been through the FBI Academy, so I can't confirm correct. That that's the issue. I can just say that this is what I've heard, that they're going more towards. Having that high profile on health and wellness right now. Well, yes. If you're putting a profile on health and wellness in your departments, and you're trying to change that way of doing things, where you're really looking out for your people and you're concerned for their health and wellness, and you're putting these policies and these programs in place to say, you know, we want you to take care of yourself. We want you to talk. We want you to let us know when things are wrong. We want to help you be, you know, better yourself so you can be a better officer. But then you walk into a police academy and the first thing they're doing is screaming in your face and telling you to do push-ups, and they're right. cussing and hollering and yelling at you. So at what point do you think these guys are going to go, oh, I'm not dealing with that. So now you want to change and go, okay, I care about your health and wellness. I would love to see the rate, and I know in Delaware it's high, of people who within the first 3 days of the academy leave because of that mentality of when they walk in. And people will look at you and disagree with me and go, well, you know, it's a good thing that they go now because, you know, later on, you know, they're going to have to really deal with it. But, okay, at what point do you have a person? Maybe you should be training these people. Maybe you should be training them to deal with that situation in a healthy manner instead of the first day they walk in screaming in their face. Now, I have that. That's my thought. And there's people that don't agree with it, which is okay. I get it. That just doesn't happen to be the way that I look at it.
I would like to take on that challenge, to be real honest with you, Chris. I really do believe that if you had 40 hours of some newer style training that was more about having them do some testing, some one-on-ones with instructors, some team building events in those 40 hours, you would have much more buy-in for the remainder of the time. And yes, you might lose some people. If you're not going to instill with them within the first 40 hours of their training, if you're not going to instill that they're part of something bigger than themselves, you have to set the, if you can set the tone in the first week that they're there and you sort of know what you're dealing with, then I think that it makes all the rest of the training weeks much easier for the recruit because they know what to expect of you. Because I think that they don't, I think that we continue to say, hey, if they put in the sweat equity, we'll then put into them.
Right.
Like if they can take a DI yelling in their face for the first hell week, because most academies, right, are that first week is that hell week. We're going to weed them out. I would say we have to, and you know that I'm not a, we got to do it. We always have done it this way person. I think that's totally wrong. But if we had some other things going on there, I would think that we would have people that would buy into policing and we can have some tough conversations with them. Like we could show them some videos of stuff instead of like, when do we have people leave? We have people leave at the first week and then when we start to get into use of force trainings.
Right.
Because then they start realizing, shit, I carry a gun and I might have to make a decision to kill somebody or I might get killed just because I'm in a uniform.
Right.
You know, I still remember that. I'm sure you've seen that video from way back in like the late 80s where there's an old man on the side of the road in Texas and he's got a rifle and that DPS officer is just yelling at him from the umpteenth time to put down the rifle. And within like, and then he shoots and kills the officer. I mean, you will always remember those videos, but why not give it to them in the first week? And then they can choose like, hey, we paid you for this week. We've got to know you. You've got to know us. We've told you what we're going to do for you. Are you going to buy in or are you not going to buy in?
Right. When you get these people that want to do this job, well, then instead of just, you know, hiring them and going through the phases of going, okay, well, I'll deal with you when the academy's over. I mean, some places have gone to that pre-academy thing, and that might be something that departments start looking at. That might be something that I'm going to start looking at is to say, hey, if you're a recruit and you want to start coming in for the first, you know, month or two before the academy, then we're going to all do our pre-stuff. And this is what you need to expect. This is what you need to do. This is what you're going to find out. This is what the job entails. This is what the job entails. This is what you're going to do here. This isn't Philadelphia. This isn't Los Angeles. This isn't Colorado. This is what you're going to do here.
Yes.
And here's the possible things that can happen. Because I don't care where you are. I had somebody say something to me the other day going, well, you work for a small department. You know, you have less of a chance of and I just cut them off. And
less of a chance of what?
I just cut them off and said, I know where it was going. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I said, do you know that a lot of the rural, small and rural police departments across the nation, their officers are some of the most to get killed in a line of duty because they don't have backup because they're out there by themselves.
Right.
Because I said, so it can happen anywhere. Just because it's not a major city doesn't mean it's got a less of a chance of happening. But you know as well as I do, all of that has is based on a lot of other factors. It's based on your knowledge and experience. It's based on the way that you approach things. It's the way that you do your job. It's the right. way that you – there's so much more to that than somebody just walking up and going – just like you said earlier. You know, you get that guy that you're dealing with and you see him start stretching because he's eyeing you up and he's thinking the whole time, well, if I run away, is this guy going to be able to catch me? Is he not right. going to catch me? Is he going to be doing whatever? Is he in shape? Is he acting like – like there's so much more to it.
Yes.
But we don't put that out there. And maybe that's the thing that we need to start doing individually. You're going to have to do it within your own agencies and within the own people you're hiring and putting that information out there and right. doing that prior to have them prepare to go, hey, look, I understand that you're not used to this, but this is what's going to happen. And right. you need to be prepared for it. So maybe we have to take that upon ourselves to say, hey, I'm going to prepare this person before they even go that first morning and drop their bag and get yelled at and get told to do 20 push-ups and do, you know, that's probably what we have to start looking at.
But the tearing down and then building back up mentality that we've been doing in law enforcement training for, I don't know, last 30 years is not like, we can't keep doing it that way. Like no, you got to think of it from a adult learning.
I agree.
Like let's think about this. Like let's play this out a little bit. You didn't have kids in school during COVID, but many people listening, I'm sure, have had kids in school during COVID. You know, was their learning the same during COVID as it was when they were at school? Obviously not. So people that are graduating that have gone through that thing in high school, they're going to be deficient in some of their areas. I mean, we can just look at that. And the other thing is we all as a culture have gone through this traumatic experience of lockdown, right? Some of us, like you and I, got to work through it. Other people, and that creates our own thing. Like I you know, that article I wrote and hopefully they'll publish in for the FBI Leader magazine. I talk a little bit about that, but I've been writing about that in some of my classes about, you know, that was a difficult time for us because we're getting exposures early and we don't know what's going on. Like we could just go home and die, you know, that kind of thing. But we can't, this hardness, like we can't go back to the way that we were doing it. And anybody that's of that age that I can only imagine what that's like being at that age. Cause I still remember things when I was in high school that were going on, like the first Gulf War, things like that, you know, that were unsettling, but it wasn't as unsettling as an entire world lockdown.
Right.
With this disease that we don't know anything about. You know, we're only, you know, 3 years out of that,
right?
2.5 years out of that. So to think that we can just go back in time and just do everything the regular way, I think that we're doing ourselves a disservice. And we need to understand that from an educational standpoint, they're going to see education much differently and learning much differently. So when we're talking about these really detailed concepts that we teach in Police Academy, which you can't just simply look up on your phone, you know, like geography, you know, like what if the computer went down? Can you navigate yourself somewhere using a map book?
Right.
Do you know east, west, north, and south? I mean, do you know what direction you're going? A lot of times people, I mean, there are people that can't get around unless they got their phone. It's sort of like driving a stick shift. If all the police cars became stick shifts, God, what would, because we'd have a ton of people not doing it, being able to drive patrol cars. So, my point is if we want to be progressive and do something different, I think that would be for an academy to sit down and say, hey, we're going to do some rigorous testing on you guys in the first week. And we're going to sit down and have some conversations and have that academy staff sit down and say, okay, this is where we want to bring these people to at the end. Mm-hmm. Great. And not just, hey, they can shoot, they can drive, they can kick somebody's ass. Okay. Right. But where are we going to build them up where they can go to their home agency? Because a lot of places can't do their internal thing.
Right.
And get them successfully through an FTO program, you know, where we could do a handoff where, hey, we've done this analysis at the beginning. We found out they're this type of learner. They have this type of personality. We did an interview and they say, you know, they define trust as this, you know, like we take care of all Lencioni's five dysfunctions of a team. We deal with them up front at the police academy. Then we're able to put them all together in different cohorts in the police academy, and the instructors, we're going to put it on them to say, hey, instructors, you need to tell the students what you're going to bring to them. Not, hey, student, come every day and we're going to give you a list of things to do. And if you're not doing it, then get the hell out.
Right. We hire somebody and we send them to an academy and we have to pick so where we're going to send them. And we're looking at them going, hey, I'm putting my recruit in your trust and get them prepared on the basic knowledge that they need to have to be police officers. And when they come out and I FTO them, then that's when they learn. Like I know when I went to the academy and even probably when you did, they said, you know, you got out of the academy and you went and you sat in the car and whoever your FTO looked at you and go, well, you just got out of the academy, right? Yeah. You forget all that shit. We're going to teach you how to do the job. Right. But the thing is I know unfortunately and maybe fortunately that sometimes I think we see that archaic thought or that archaic values of going, this is how we've been doing it, is slowly, very slowly changing with some academies. And I think we're losing a lot of good people. Initially, years ago, people said they were hiring for jobs and they were like, well, unless you got college, don't even apply. You're like, well, you know how many people that could be good at this job that you are losing just because they don't have a college education?
Correct. Agencies.
Exactly. We'd have never been officers. We'd have never been doing what we're doing now. We'd have never been learning because you can learn as you go and then you decide to get better educated as you move along. Like you're doing, I didn't go get my associate's degree until 2017. Right. I didn't get my bachelor's degree until 2 years ago. So, and I'm working on my master's now, but it didn't preclude me from being an officer and doing what I've done. Right. I've been doing this job for over 20 years. But that's changed now, and people have seen that, and then we can educate officers, and officers get educated once they get into the academy. So you see in that slow change, but that change is going so slowly that we refuse to see a lot of the things that we're talking about with the newer generation, and if we don't change... And if it doesn't change, then smaller agencies, bigger agencies are already having the problem with even hiring when they're losing people to retirement like crazy and they can't even fill half of who they lose.
Correct.
So what do you think's happening with municipal, small, rural, and tribal agencies across this nation?
Right.
It's getting down to maybe, you know, three or four people, and they're all people who are... You know, in our generation who are getting closer to retirement, or what I say to people and they laugh at me, I go closer to the end than the beginning, because I'm not going to be doing this when I'm 65 years old.
Right.
And many people aren't anymore because there's way too much more demand on the job. But we got to change.
Well, that gets to the whole thing of, and I'm not talking about a national police force when I say this. So I'm just saying this off.
Everybody, if we had
if you had a national certification with state addendums to it, you know, like I'm a nationally certified peace officer. So I can work in the United States of America, but I might have to, like if I go to Delaware, there's a small test that I have to take to know that I know the statutes there in Delaware. I know the nuances of difference of the what Delaware requires of a peace officer versus Colorado. Same for that. If we had something like that, which is a long ways from happening, but if we were able to do that, I know that there would be plenty of people like you and I at our levels. We go to these conferences and we know we have officers that would be great at your agency. You have officers at your agency that would be great at mine.
Right.
So why couldn't we say, hey, you know, here we got Officer One that they've been doing this for 13, 14 years. They've said, hey, I only want to do like smaller policing. Like nothing is happening here. I would like to go to a smaller place that my family can go to school, that cost of living is cheaper, you know, all these things. Well, okay, hey, we could do that. Or the officer, I bring this up all the time. I had a teammate tell me last year in the one-on-ones, their grand plan was they were looking at getting a master's degree, so they were planning in the next 2 years to start applying to college police departments so they could go to college. Right. So they could work at the college and go to the college. Like retirees, that would be great, right? Like David that we know works at LSU. Yeah, he went there because his daughter wanted to go to school there.
Sure. That's what some people do.
And think of the hundreds of dollars that thousands of dollars that we spend from a budgetary standpoint of putting people through backgrounds and things like that. Like if there was just one conglomeration of things like the transfer portal that they have in the NCAA of police officers, I think that would really open it up and make people choose, hey, where am I going to go?
Sure.
You know, but well, that's a long ways away. Pipe dream. We're dreaming out loud.
Yeah. I think that's something for another day. And, I'll tell you what, Matt, I thank you. I think we can go anywhere at any time. I just, this conversation kind of went a little all over the place, but I think we got to a good place in talking about a lot of things that we're dealing with and a lot of things that, you know, agencies are dealing with across the nation. I mean, we can have a voice for that stuff and hopefully they listen to those things. But as you said, that's something that has to be a change that's decided at those levels, at those academy levels. And I think they're getting there, but I think it's a slow move. So we can only hope and continue to pray that more people begin to want to do this job and to be law enforcement officers, because it's really getting hard to hire people, and it's really getting hard to keep people. And I think you can change, you don't have to change drastically, but you can change enough at the beginning to say, hey, I really got to start teaching people now. Right. We have to give them an education on how to deal with things that they didn't ever deal with before. You can't expect them to react because it's just the way they're reacting is badly. And you're weeding out the people that you think can't do the job, but you're probably losing maybe half of them are people that could actually be good police officers. But you've done yes. forced them out. You've cut yourself in half and you've forced them out. So we can only hope that it gets better. And I believe it'll get better. And I believe as what we talk about, the pendulum always swings, you know, one way or the other. But the problem is it seems to swing heavy one way and then heavy another way. If we can get a time where it kind of sits right there in the middle and kind of teeters back and forth a little bit, we might be able to rebuild this profession. So thank you for your time, my friend. It's always great to see you.
Thanks for having me. I just want to do one last pitch. And, you know, if any of the listeners are out there and they're listening to the two of us chuckleheads talk and they're like, wow, these guys are saying things that I think of in the middle of the night when I'm all by myself and I'm thinking about how things could change. We want to meet you. We want to talk to you. We want you to become part of our community. And you can reach out on TrueBold with me on LinkedIn. Like, there's going to be more content coming out soon from TrueBold, both on the website as well as on LinkedIn. We had a great Thursday event a few weeks ago, and I want to continue to have those, and they'll be probably monthly type of things. And we're going to have some people that you hear on this podcast there. Chris is always willing to come on and help me out with those things. But if you're out there in law enforcement and you feel like you're the most marginalized person in your supervision group because you talk about empathy, you talk about your why, you talk about outside the box thinking, we're here. We want to have those discussions with you and help you know that you're not alone. So that's my pitch, Chris.
There you go. Now, I was going to ask you because I know you're good for that, and I always appreciate it. And I stand with Matt on the same thing. That's what we're here for. We're here to have those conversations. We're here to have you think a little bit. We're not, you know, these are just our opinions. These are things that we think about. We value other people's opinions. We value what you think. We're not all right, and you can agree or disagree, and that's okay. But we'd like to hear from you. As Matt had said, join us on LinkedIn. Join our program. Join some of the things that Matt is doing. I do enjoy them very much. We have some great conversations with people who are in law enforcement, who are not in law enforcement. They are just lay people who bring some of their thoughts to the table, and which are great to listen to. We will have more as we come along. I enjoy doing this. I'm having a great time. And I thank you, Matt, for joining me again. Like, as I told you before, you will see Matt and me on here a lot because we can have these conversations and we're very comfortable with what we have, what we think, and what we bounce off of each other. And as you can see, we're able to talk with each other and get them through. So until the next time, we thank you for listening to us here at the Deep Blue Project, and you all stay safe. Take care, Matt. Have a good one. Be safe, my brother.
Thank you.
See you later. Bye.
You've been listening to the Deep Blue Project.
As a father, husband, friend, and someone who loves to chat about anything and everything, Chris brings over 3 decades of public service experience to the table. With a background in firefighting and law enforcement, along with degrees in criminal justice and behavioral science, he's seen it all, and he's learned a thing or two along the way. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on LinkedIn and X at Deep Blue Project. Find our website at deepblueproject.com. And to reach out, send an email to deepblueproject@outlook.com. Keep keeping it real. And we'll see you next time on the Deep Blue Project.